Here we go. Hello and welcome to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. Today's episode brought to you by the Big Bang.
Boom.
Sitting next to me is my co-host Heather Henderson.
Hi, everybody.
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the inner tubes, and from our other award-winning podcast, Ardent Atheist. You can find links to our guest website, join our Twitter and Facebook feeds, subscribe to our premium 90-minute full-length episodes, and our email at skepticallyyours.net.
If you'd like to take part in a live chat moderated by Joe Swam, go to skepticallyyours.net/live and chat us up right now.
That's right, and please go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast for free, help write a review, help us out, get us in the top 10. You may also go to skepticallyyours.net/premium and subscribe to our premium ad-free content for a measly $10 per year.
Subscribe now or I'll sick my pet Yeti on you.
Wait. You don't have a Yeti?
Proof that I don't have a tiny pink one in my pocket right now.
You don't even have any pockets.
That's besides the point. Proof that my Yeti and Skippy aren't playing chess in my pocket right now.
Wait a minute. Who's Skippy?
A Bigfoot.
That's not what I'm... Wait. I give up.
Aha!
Whoa.
If you're a listener who's ever been duped by anything that's been debunked on Snopes, welcome. Your ordeal is over.
We're coming to you live from the E&H Studios in sunny Studio City, California. In the Studio City tonight, we have Don Prothero. Did I say it right? I'm always saying his name wrong. Don Prothero and Adam Kaplan. You know these guys from the world of reason. We did it again.
We're always going to do it.
It's like ghosty,
just
that
get
sound.
Over it.
It's a ghost
Christ.
Sound. Why do we do that?
We're going to do it.
Don, thanks for being here, man.
Thanks for inviting me.
I've been wanting to get you on the show for a while. You did Ardent Atheist for us.
Yes, a couple of years ago now, I think, yes.
Yeah, and we went to, and we're not going to talk a lot about the whole God thing today. This is Skeptically Yours, but, you know, you and I, we went to the Creationist Museum down near San Diego.
That
together.
Was fun.
Yep.
That was fantastic.
Mind-blowing experience in lots of ways.
Right?
It was awesome watching you work. On that guy.
I suspect there are some listeners of Skeptically Yours who don't know that Heather and I do a show called Ardent Atheist, and we joined Ross and Carrie from Oh No Ross and Carrie for their show to go down to the Creationist Museum and talk to the I want to be kind to this guy Jagoff that was running it, and that's me being kind for the record.
Well, they were videotaping a whole bunch of all the bull that was going on in there. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was...
There was a guy talking about Adam, and he was giving a lecture or a speech or a little tour, and he was talking about how Adam and Eve were real people and got that all on film.
Well, they're what is it, 4,000-year creationist or 10,000-year?
Well, they allow 6,000, most of them.
6,000? Is that
some allow 10, that's the limit.
Right. They can't even agree on the extra couple grand.
Yeah.
But my favorite moment... of that whole thing, you stayed back by the wall and you just watched Ross and Carrie and myself and Heather interacting with this guy that was making these absolutely absurd arguments.
Yep.
And at one point, I think he actually quote-mined a personal friend of yours.
Well, he quote-mined a bunch of people, Darwin to start with, but then Stephen Jay Gould and Niles Eldridge, and I was trained by Niles Eldridge. So.
There you go.
That was something that at that point he had been calling my entire profession a bunch of liars, and I thought it was time to step in and reveal the mask.
Yeah, and you leapt forward. Your cape was swinging in the breeze as he was.
You couldn't hold it in anymore.
No, I was seething for quite a while.
Man,
but trying
he was
to stay out of it.
It was really wonderful. But you leapt forward, and do you remember what you said to him when you came forward when he had talked specifically? He had just finished debasing Darwin's points of view.
Well, the first place, we caught him on the classic quote mine out of Darwin's Origin of Species, where he talks about the problem with the origin of the eye, and they always chop it off just after the first part of the quote, because, of course, Darwin is setting up one part of the quote to sound like it support creationism and then shooting it down the next
it's
part,
great. You were
which
like,
they always leave out.
So you leave out the part.
But the miracle was, that the day of iPhones, you can pull that quote up in seconds. And to correct him, which
you said,
didn't
quote
used to
the
be
rest.
Possible.
Quote the rest.
Yeah, that's right.
And he claimed he didn't know any of it.
Yeah, that's right.
He was literally just stopping there, and there wasn't any more in his.
And
his
it probably purview. Is true because of what he's gotten is creationist books, which always chop it at the same place.
Right. Right. Which
so
is
he wouldn't
so
have read
awful.
Beyond that.
And it's I consider I hate the word evil. You know, I'm not a fan of it. But when it comes to applying that word, I think to only quote the beginning of a quote. And completely change the context and meaning of it, that's true evil for me. You
certainly
know?
Is dishonest, which always to me is odd because These people claim to be moral. These people claim to be religious. And,
only when it helps them get their way.
That's right. Right. That's right.
That's like telling only half of a joke. You know what I mean? Two Jews walk into a bar. Is there any more? No, it's just a couple of Jews. That's all it is. There's a punchline, you jag off.
What's the punchline?
The punchline is they're really stingy. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
So I think that this the reason I like kicking off the show with that story is because one of the things that we hear in the skeptic community is that in this tent, religion is given a pass. And it's not actually true. Religion, when there are lies and claims made that right. are testable, then the skeptic world does indeed go after those folks.
Indeed, it does, yes.
And Ross and Kerry are great examples of that with that particular episode.
Right, they've looked at a lot of religions now, I think, in the last couple of years.
So. Yeah.
And they don't usually find too much of merit in any of them. So
exactly. Well,
thank God for the internet.
hallelujah. Praise his name. So enough on that. You have two books out.
Yes.
Which I just think is showing off.
Well, it's an accident, actually, because both of them were written at least 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah?
And it's just the slow process of production and printing that takes much longer than you think it will take.
Yeah.
Two of them were supposed to be out last year, and now they're all going to show up in the next 6 months like they were all written last week, you know.
Right.
But I have five out this year altogether.
Wow.
So.
How many books do you have total?
36, I think, now.
What?
Is that right?
Like I said, he's showing off.
You asked.
You wow. know what they say about an author who has 35 books out?
Oh, no, I don't know that. No,
that's the end of the joke.
That's the end of the joke. There's more to that joke, but I'm not going to do it. I love your books. Let me hand me your books right now. I want to start with the cryptids. This is a fantastic cover, by the way. Let's see if we can get that on the camera. There we go.
You see the cover better on Amazon.com anyway.
Yes. Yeah, no kidding. Abominable Science, a word I had a lot of trouble with when I was a kid.
Yeah, it is a word. Challenging concept. Yes.
When I was a kid, shut up, and then people did that. God damn it,
well,
it's my show.
Well, you say that like you don't have trouble with some words still.
Sure as I'm sitting here,
oh my
I
God.
Have trouble with words. What's the matter? Did I ruin it?
Mm.
You hold that one. Abominable, see, I did it.
Okay.
Really, honestly, there were two words as a kid that really drove me nuts. And we heard about the abominable snowman, and you just find it hilarious, don't you?
Well, I was just thinking of the other word. There's so many of them that are popping into my mind.
Uh-huh.
Is there another word I have trouble with?
Not that you actually have trouble with.
Yeah.
Berry?
Yeah, that would
like
be
to bury someone out back?
No, that's not a problem word for me. I'll tell you a problem word for me. As a kid,
what about miscegenation?
No, I'm good at that.
Speaking it, not the other part. Yeah.
Right. My trouble word as a kid that really made me crazy, we had a street that helped me kind of sort it out, but it took me like a couple years to wrap my head around the difference between a booger and a burger. Let's go get hamburgers.
Really?
And yes, and
what?
In my head, I heard hamburgers, and I'm like, that sounds awful. And it was, as a young boy, it was very confusing to me. I'm an idiot, by the way.
Something wrong with your ears.
No, there's just something wrong with my brain.
Still not convinced you're not at least a little retarded.
At least a little. So I love the cover. Who did this cover? It looks like a comic book.
That was the idea. Columbia University Press designers did that. I don't know which particular one did, but the book is...
He's good.
It has a couple of threads going through it. And one, of course, is the fact that the entire topic is sort of the realm of comic books and tabloids and things like that. So the designer picked that thread up, and, of course, it looks like a shredded comic book or tabloid cover, even though it's all faux.
You could fold it and put it in your back pocket.
That's right. A little too thick for that now. And also pretty heavy. If you heft the book, you'll discover it's heavier than you think it will be.
I have a question.
Yes.
Are you a cryptozoologist?
In the sense that I've written a book about it, yes, I could probably claim
Question
that.
Question two, what is a cryptozoologist?
A cryptozoologist is anyone who studies hidden animals, what the name literally means, and in this context it means extraordinary things that zoology doesn't recognize as real.
Crypto.
Crypto means hidden.
Hidden.
And zoologist,
is life?
Well, animals, actually. Animals.
So what are some examples of these cryptozoological creatures?
Well, they're all the familiar ones. Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, the Yeti, or Abominable Snowman, as it's been called, which is a misnomer. Number of others. Mokele Mbembe, the supposed dinosaur of the Congo.
Oh, cool.
Why is it a misnomer now? Let's get back to misnomer, because the Yeti, you're saying, is not abominable?
No, the name, actually... The name was...
Now you're showing off.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
The name was a mistranslation by a tabloid journalist. A British tabloid journalist operating out of Calcutta heard the accounts of some of the early expeditions in the late 1800s. And the Nepalese word he was given, which is translates a filthy wild man of the snows, he retranslated that as abominable rather than filthy. It's not a very good translation of the Nepalese, apparently. And that,
it's
of course,
difficult
sold a lot more books, you know.
Oh,
it
right,
made,
right.
Made it much more of a colorful monster. It, all that time had been called by native words like Yeti and things like that. And all of a sudden, this journalist creates a new label for it, and now it's a major part of our culture.
Oh, wow.
So is it allegedly from the Himalayan mountains?
That's the idea, yes.
Initially, right?
Do you think at any point in the history of the world there was a comparable creature somewhere in the Himalayan mountains?
As you'll see, if you read the book in that chapter, the evidence is...
He's not going to tell you. You have to read the book.
Pretty strongly against it. I would say 99.99% against it.
Ever,
yes.
Ah.
There isn't really... Everything that's been alleged to support this stuff is either bad sightings or hoaxes or misinterpretations of trackways and lots of stuff. There's a very strange history because it's got Nazis in it, CIA and
wow.
KGB and... And rich oil men who wanted to solve the world's problems.
That should have been the most recent Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Not that
crystal
skull
crap.
The actor Jimmy Stewart smuggled some bones, one of these things, out of Nepal one time.
Is that true?
His wife's a lingerie case because they knew they wouldn't search it. So it was a very remarkable story. How
I would expect them to
characters?
Search only that case. That's some of the worst.
Apparently,
customs in Britain was different back then.
Try doing that today, yeah.
It's all in the book.
That's all part of that
that's
story, yes.
That's really great.
Yeah, and then...
You're making me want to read.
Well, good, yes. Good. That's the idea.
Why do we fall for this crap? Because as a kid, I did. And I fear, and I could be wrong, but
you feared the abominable snowman as a child?
I fear the word abominable. I fear that kids today are also falling for this, and I just came across a recent story, we talked about it on the show here, where someone said, incredible evidence of Bigfoot.
Right.
Yep. And it was a small paper up in, I don't know, Michigan or something, and there was no evidence in the story
at all.
The headline
was
an absolute lie. What was the evidence?
The evidence was they went on a walk in the area, and they had rocks thrown at them and at the house that they were nearby.
Yeah, they were in a cabin, and there were
well,
rocks
so
thrown.
So it's obviously...
What about this megalodon thing?
Oh, yeah, that's another thread there, but yes.
I should have made that a topic. Did you know about this?
Yes, I actually blogged about it last week. You want to look it up. It's on skepticblog.org.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about the megalodon. First of all, it was the Disco Channel? Did they do it on?
Yeah, the Disco Channel, which is about being a good name for it now.
It's a much better name, in my opinion, for it.
It doesn't have much to do with science or discovery anymore, that's for sure.
No, they've completely lost their way, and I don't know if it's a sign of the times, but there's that story, and there's the mermaid story.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
So we got to talk about both of those things. Cool.
Neither are nearly as good as Jimmy Stewart sneaking Yeti bones in his wife's laundry. I'd really like to hear more.
We'll talk more about
Read
Jimmy Stewart as
Read
well.
The book.
You're listening to Skeptically Yours on SkepticallyYours.net and available at the iTunes Store. More after this unavoidable irritation.
Good news, everyone.
That's right. We have a premium ad-free service. We do the show for 90 minutes, and you'll be able to listen to the live show and or download the first hour free from iTunes. The premium service will allow you to subscribe to the full 90-minute ad-free show. It's only $10 per year. If you want to support us, please go to skepticallyyours.net/premium and subscribe. The average chocolate bar has 8 insect legs in it, and the average human eats 8 spiders in their lifetime at night. While that's probably not true,
Foundation Beyond Belief is a community of compassionate humanists and atheists supporting outstanding charities worldwide. Members sign up for automatic donations starting at $5 a month, then distribute those funds however they wish among the featured charities. To date, this unique humanist organization has raised over $750,000 to make this world a better, more humane place. We don't look to the skies for a better world. Foundation Beyond Belief is humanity at work. Learn more or join us at foundationbeyondbelief.org.
Hi, I'm David Diskin, and I wanted to tell you about Camp Quest West. We're a secular summer camp for non-religious families, and our week-long program for kids runs this summer in locations in California and over a dozen others throughout the U.S. At Camp Quest, we give kids the traditional camp experience like archery, swimming, arts and crafts, and campfire songs, but we add science, skepticism, humanism, and critical thinking. There's a few spots left for parents who want to register their kids, but we're also asking for your help. We turn every donation into camperships for families that can't afford to send their children to camp. We're 100% volunteer-based, a tax-exempt 501c3, and our amazing financial aid program is supported by the free thought and skeptic community by people like you. I want to see how much Emery and Heather's fans can raise for Camp Quest West. Visit tinyurl.com/ardentcampquest or look for the link on their Facebook page. You can learn more about our California camps and the others throughout the U.S. by visiting campquest.org.
Did you see that UFO sighting that made the news? What did that latest study about alternative treatments really say? Is this photo making the rounds real or a hoax? Doubtful News is a unique website featuring news about pseudoscience, the paranormal, anomalies, and questionable claims framed with a skeptical view. Come visit DoubtfulNews.com every day for news about cryptozoology, conspiracies, shams, scams, and more. Follow us on Twitter at Doubtful News. Critical thinking is essential in assessing today's news. Doubtful News helps you decide, can you really believe this stuff?
My name is Brian Dunning. I solve mysteries for a living. As the host and producer of the award-winning podcast Skeptoid, I've researched just about every mystery and urban legend you can imagine. Some are solved, some remain unsolved, but the science behind all of them is amazing. This project is for a new book capturing 50 of the very best stories that Skeptoid has explored. Can zombies actually be created by Haitian witch doctors? What can exorcisms really do? Are pit bulls really deadlier than other dog breeds? Who was Jack the Ripper? Have dolphins really been trained for combat against divers? How much stronger can you become during an emergency? What are the most astounding experiments scientists have performed on themselves? Please help bring massacres, monsters, and miracles to bookshelves. It'll be available in print and in all ebook formats, and with your support to libraries, schools, and educational book suppliers. Join me in shining the light of science on the mysteries that continue to confound. Massacres, Monsters, and Miracles, to be published by Skeptoid Media. I'm Brian Dunning from Skeptoid.com.
Go search Kickstarter for Brian Dunning's project, and please, if you can afford to give him some money, do so.
Why doesn't he just get money from his rich brother Jeff with all the puppets?
Explain.
And now back to Skeptical Yours, where okay. Thinking is free. We're talking with Don Prothero. And ignoring Adam Kaplan. You're talking,
where
of course.
Thinking just doesn't happen.
We're thinking, yeah, I know, right? Where thinking is free. Did I not say that?
No, you did, but I meant with Adam Kaplan, where
thinking never happens with
Adam
Kaplan.
Well, actually, today I'm not in character. You can tell because I'm wearing a white shirt. That means I'm myself.
Oh.
And I'm wearing a black shirt. That's a little secret on the other podcast. Then I'm my character.
Always the black shirt for the ardent atheist.
Evil Adam.
Mm-hmm. Right. During the break we were talking, because that's what we do, and Amanda brought something up about the population. Go ahead, Amanda.
Oh, I was just saying, the thing that always got me with Bigfoot and all of that is, in order to have it, you know, exist, you would have to at least have a population of X amount of individuals.
Right.
Which there will be evidence of.
That's right.
Some kind of evidence. One of the problems is that it's much like religion.
Wait, let me be very clear. Some kind of physical evidence of.
There you go. I was going to say, one of the problems is, in cryptozoology, is what they consider to be evidence.
That's right. You know, very big problem.
Rocks.
Yeah, the story, rocks being thrown at a cabin are only evidence of one thing. Rocks being thrown at a cabin.
Right.
That's in no way,
evidence
shape, or form.
Palestinians.
Sorry. More likely it's Palestinians.
Yeah. Or if you're in the woods, you hear a sound you don't understand, it's a sound you don't understand, not necessarily Bigfoot automatically.
Kind of like a UFO.
All right.
UFOs. I mean, a lot of people, if you see something in the sky that you can't identify, that doesn't mean that you've just seen a spaceship.
You've just seen a UFO. That's right.
Yeah.
Which is unidentified. That's all it is.
Well, that's one of the problems. Do you talk about that in your other book?
The other book is more about science denialism, but there are some threads that are similar.
I want to cover more on cryptozoology because we have more questions for you, but we're going to get to reality check by the end of the show. Earlier I had asked, why do we eat this shit up, Don? Why do people like it so much? And my follow-up question is going to be, just so you know, where's the harm? Because that's a lot of people ask that question. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, we actually did an entire...
I have a question after
Okay, cool.
One at a time. We actually spent the entire last chapter of the book on that particular topic because there is actually quite a large body of research on that theme, and also, you know, surveying across a whole spectrum of different kinds of belief systems, not just cryptids, but UFOs and ghosts and religions. The Baylor Religious Survey actually includes questions about Bigfoot and UFOs in it. So you can actually do cross population studies where you look at what variables correlate with which kinds of belief systems. And what's surprising about that is that in most part, the people who believe in Bigfoot are often the same people who believe in UFOs and other paranormal phenomena, and they're boringly normal. They're often married with kids and conventional lives, and there isn't any obvious anomalous
I see what this is. This is what I would refer to as the universal city walk syndrome. Now, what I mean by that...
Yeah, you have to explain it to the non-locals here.
Well, you have to understand, there is a place called Universal City Walk that is just filled with this... with huge statues and flashing lights, and it's an assault on the senses. And people come from all around the world, and I'm convinced 99.9% of the people coming from all around the world are coming from a cubicle. And that's what draws them, is this, I've got to change my life, at least for this fucking 7 days that I get paid to be off. I got to change my life in a dramatic way because my life is shit.
Well, I could be part of it. The Bigfooters especially... there is a tendency among them to have a lot of these guys who think instead they're going to go hunt deer in the woods, they're going to hunt Bigfoot in the woods. And so their idea of proving their manliness and getting out into nature and all the rest is to pull out the camping gear and go tromping in the woods and try to find Bigfoot.
Other.
You know, that's basically
what fuck each other.
Yeah. That's the excuse.
Bobcat. You're not here for the hunting, are you?
Right.
Bobcat Goldthwait, doesn't he have a new film about a Bigfoot folk?
I haven't seen it yet. And
I don't think Hollywood does one almost every other year. It's hard to
Well, Bobcat's fantastic.
Yeah, well, he's hilarious.
Oh, Bobcat's I'm sure he does something that's crazy. But a lot of them are not intended to be funny. They're intended to be serious.
No, I'm dying to see what he does with
World's Greatest Dad. And
I've seen a lot of his acts. So anyway, there's another aspect to it, too, and that is you think about it in the long term. Most times in human society, there have always been monsters in our lives. Monsters is part of our lore. Monsters is part of our sort of explaining the mysterious in our lives. And we're one of the few cultures that has a non-mysterious, sort of non-supernatural view of the world. And a lot of people say, well, that may be easy to talk about, but a lot of people have a need for that mystery and that unexplained. You know, if you think about the success of X-Files and all those paranormal shows on TV, those people eat it up.
They want their fairy
tales.
They
want their fairy tales, yes.
Right. There's also Vince Gilligan, who's doing Breaking Bad right now.
There's a guy who... I'm not listening to you. There's a guy who stands... He has a truck, and it's got Yeti on it, and he sells little trinkets, and he doesn't have a job. I believe he's not working, and that's how he makes his money, but he stands down by the lock...
Yeah.
And he stares out into the water, and he's just stares out into the water for hours because he knows he's going to see the Loch Ness Monster.
Okay.
And
well,
people come.
You
to
need
him.
To understand something about Scottish people.
I don't think he's Scottish.
I can always make it about race. Has anyone figured that out yet?
We know.
Don't worry, I'm not Scottish. You don't want to insult me.
But what's his problem? That's my question.
That sounds like he's got some kind of mental issues.
Well,
so.
That's obsession, right?
Yeah, that's obsession.
I
have a question.
Yes.
I'm very proud of this question. If you had to pick one of the cryptozoological creatures that maybe, possibly, might actually, kind of, might have existed at one point in time, like if
That's a good question.
Pick one.
That is a good question. I'm surprised.
None of the ones we covered are real. Okay. And
but
I
what
think
if you
the
had
evidence
to pick
is 99.99% against them.
I have one.
Well, there the five that are in the book, there have been remarkable discoveries in the deep sea recently.
Yeah.
But they're not the kind of sea serpents that legends hold. They are things like vampire squid and these other strange creatures that live in very deep water. So those are not ruled out, and we're very explicit about that. There are creatures in the deep oceans. But on the other hand, there are no megalodons running around anymore because they don't live in the deep ocean. They live in the very shallow water.
I pick a unicorn.
Sorry, a unicorn's not in the book. So.
Damn it.
Well, for a long time, we heard about the giant squid, and we didn't really have proof that the giant squid for a long time existed.
Well,
am I wrong?
We've had their washed-up carcasses for about 50, 60 years now. So
okay.
We knew they existed, but they live in such deep water, it's almost impossible to observe them in life.
All right. So the recent discoveries have been being able to film them in action because we're able to get deeper now.
Oh, they haven't got much luck filming them still. Because,
really?
They're very fast moving, and things that work in the deep ocean are very slow moving submersibles that are used to film stationary objects. They don't have anything that can chase a squid in the deep waters.
And a squid wouldn't leave a fossil, right? It would just kind of disappear.
Not probably. The squid has a little rod-like thing in the middle of its back part of its body, supports the back part of its body, but generally speaking, that's not hard enough to fossilize. There are some extinct ones that did have hard ones that fossilized, but none of the modern ones do.
Yeah, you can get soft tissue fossilized if it's in just the right form.
Yes, there are
a
couple of examples of extraordinary preservation where you actually have fossil squid preserved, but they're very extremely rare.
And that's important to note because a lot of people will make arguments that we don't have a full fossil record. Yeah. And we have a nutty, huge fossil record.
That's right.
It's just a lie.
That's something, as a paleontologist, that was one of the primary things I wanted to contribute to this book, is that no one had ever addressed that set of evidence and set of arguments. But, we have, especially for large animals, which are large bones behind, like a Bigfoot or a Nessie or a Yeti, we have an extraordinary fossil record. And it's something as big as a plesiosaur from the Mesozoic would leave bones somewhere in the last 65 million years.
Right.
Because we have marine deposits with whales and many other things in them in the last 65 million years, yet not one plesiosaur bone's ever shown up. And that's negative evidence, but it's very, very strong negative evidence. And even more importantly than that, it's something I didn't see anyone ever make this argument before. The idea of Bigfoot, of course, would depend on the idea somehow there's been a primate in North America all this time that hadn't left a fossil record, and that's garbage.
If
there's anything we have a good fossil record of, it's Ice Age mammals. I actually work on those down at Rancho La Brea sometimes.
Right.
And we have literally tens of thousands of every species of Ice Age mammal that's ever lived in North America.
Yeah.
And even the rare ones, we have hundreds of specimens. And so the idea that there's some big ape-like creature running around and never leaves a fossil behind is stretching.
He's eating his own fossils.
That's right.
So Danny Lobel was on the show, and he took exception with the Bigfoot hunters trying to shame them, saying that, listen, if Bigfoot exists and it's been able to be this elusive for this long, for this many years, clearly it wants to be left alone. So you're a dick for chasing it, which I think is a fantastic way.
You could say that a lot of animals, too. So they don't want to be bothered by us any more than Bigfoot would be. So.
And we go around tagging everything, don't we?
That's right. Well, mostly we destroy their habitat. That's the fastest way we wipe their lives out. So.
Right.
And that's one of the other points. People think that old growth forest where Bigfoot supposedly lives is a widespread phenomenon. If you ever travel the Pacific Northwest and gotten behind the screen of trees the logging companies leave by the road so you won't see it, virtually every square foot of timberland in the Northwest has been logged, several times.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that those trees that they're seeing now were actually put up there by the timber companies.
Actually, it was planted by the Forest Service after the timber companies go and take them out. Yes, and many of those have been doing three or four different cycles over a century. Yeah. So those forests are literally like grains of or fields of grain. They're farmed by the big logging companies. And so there isn't very much left of any kind of pristine forest for a Bigfoot to live in.
What about anywhere in the world? Maybe not just necessarily Bigfoot, but if there was one region of the world that was hiding some sort of cryptozoological creature and that you had to give credence to?
Well, again, the deep ocean is the best candidate.
You're really looking for something.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to be as honest as I can. Yeah. The deep ocean is the one place that we have underexplored. But maybe you could say the Himalayas, relatively compared to most parts of the world, have
Hearing what you're saying, Don.
Smaller populations.
Bigfoot can dive.
A megalodon is real.
Well, let's talk about the megalodon.
Okay.
What the hell
keep
are you
raising the issue.
I'm hungry. All right, listen. Megalodon is not alive. I have his teeth sitting right back behind you, I believe.
I don't want to turn
fossilized
around.
Fossilized teeth.
He's real. Discovery told me.
Mm-hmm.
Was he real at any point? I don't
sure,
know much
megalodon,
about this megalodon.
Well, what we know about... Well, hold on. What am I doing? Don, tell us what we know about megalodon.
Megalodon is the largest shark, as far as we know, that ever lived. It was about 50 feet long.
Jesus.
Looked like a great white shark or a mako shark, but it was much bigger.
And we're basing that on the fact that we've seen its head. We've seen its teeth.
The only part that's bony that preserves is teeth.
Teeth. That's
sharks
all we get.
Sharks are made out of cartilage. Otherwise, it's pretty rare to ever get any rest of the shark preserved, except in unusual places. So you take the teeth and you put them together in the way a modern,
that
say,
they
great
would fit
white.
In the mouth.
Yeah, the way they fit in the mouth, because they scale down from the teeth in the front down to the teeth around the hinge of the jaw.
Right.
There's a gradient of size, and no matter how you do that, you'll still get a pair of jaws that's big enough to swallow several people at once.
Wow.
And so they're expected to be...
Wait, several American people?
Any kind. Any
okay.
kind. You know, their gape is at least 8 feet across. So they were big predators, and they lived at a time, primarily they're known from a period about 15 million years ago, we had a much greater diversity of whales on this planet all over than we do now. And so they're thought to be largely whale predators. And we have a number of fossilized whale bones that have scrape marks on them that only a megalodon tooth could make.
I see.
So that's our best bet. And, for example, the famous Shark Tooth Hill bone bit up near Bakersfield.
Bakersfield,
It produces.
You get to see sandy color ones there as opposed
to the
gray
ones. They come in lots
ones.
Of colors, yeah. The ones out of Shark Tooth Hill are sort of yellowish colors. The ones from North Carolina are black.
Yeah.
The ones from Florida are white and so on. They come from different localities.
And they're all scary.
They would have been scary if you were in the water with them. That's
Is mine
right.
over there? Do we see it? See if you can see it, Adam.
Anyway, but the point of it being that these animals were super predators. They're probably primarily whale predators. They would go after big prey that very few things in a day can attack. And there's no evidence that they've ever lived since the last 2 million years. The oldest, youngest known megalodon teeth are roughly 2 million years old, and there's no evidence they survived.
Holy crap.
But they did a show on Discovery Channel just this past couple of weeks or months.
Sharknado?
No,
that's a different
Derek
one.
Sharknado.
That's a whole other pile of stupid.
No, but it was like Megalodon Lives or something like that in the title. So
yeah, and then they had a disclaimer at the end for 3 seconds.
Well, that actually wasn't a disclaimer if you read it, right? It just said these animals once existed. There were lots of unexplained sightings. No further, comment on that.
Yeah.
It basically said, too, that anyone who was involved with making it had no final approval of content.
Right. Well, there were no scientists in except for one exception.
Yeah.
They were all actors.
That'd be a
in other words, they're admitting
right
that they're dishonestly editing.
Right.
That's like an admission.
This is just like they did an alien one about this a couple months ago that I was really pissed about. That was about, it was like a documentary on after we had been colonized by an alien species. But there was no mention at any point if it was real or fake or whatever.
Well, I'm glad I missed all these shows.
So if you just turn the TV on, it's War of the Worlds all over again.
Got you for 5 minutes. You and I were chatting.
Oh, yeah, Megalodon, yeah.
And I'm like, baby, that's bullshit. And you go, no, it's not on Disco. It's something else. And I went, no, I've read about it.
So what killed the Megalodon fellow?
I have a question, by the way.
Okay, one
about the
time.
What was your question?
What killed the megalodon?
That's a boring question. Here's my question. My question, because it's my show, is I think the answer is a bigger megalodon. But my question is it possible it wasn't? First of all, let's put some perspective in the minds of the listeners. You say it's about 50 feet long.
Probably, yes.
Do we know what's the average length of a great white these days? 20 or 30?
20, 25 is typical for a large great white.
Okay, so that tells you right there.
About
we're talking
twice the size.
Twice the size. Is it possible that it just was 20 or 25 foot long, but had a huge fucking mouth?
That's a possibility, but sharks are pretty predictable. They scale very straight, and if you were dealing with a shark that has a modern relative, you pretty much, the best bet is that it's so similar to its modern relative, you scale accordingly.
Maybe it was a really dorky shark with giant teeth.
That's what I think. Yeah,
well,
maybe,
there are those, too.
Maybe it was a Hollywood shark.
If you see the famous shark that has a teeth like a big spiral whorl, and people for years were trying to figure out how to fit in their mouth. They finally found a specimen that shows how it fits.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's actually a big chain feed that unwinds in their lower jaw, and so just the front edge of it at any given time is used.
So seriously, did the whales that they eat die off or something? How'd they
Is a big climate change about 2 million years ago, and he lost a lot of the warm water fauna that had lived right before the ice age kicked in. And so if you lose your food source, there's a good chance you're going to lose the predators as well.
Yeah. But isn't it... Now, this always confuses me, and I'm not trying to be cheeky as often I am.
Okay, that's
this
fine.
This often confuses me, and I want to make sure I clarify it. It isn't extinct as much as it evolved into what we see today. I mean,
extinct.
Out of my mind?
No, it's a relative of the modern great white, which is Carcharodon.
Okay.
But it's in a different genus that no longer lives. It's Carcharocles.
Is that right?
Carcharocles. It used to be in the genus of great whites, but at no time was it ever thought. The great white has also been around side by side with the super great white.
I see.
So the two are lineages that lived in parallel.
Okay.
Is there like a mammal equivalent of this thing?
a predator that big?
Yeah.
Not really.
No.
There are some that
Bigfoot.
No, there are some things like Androsarcus, which is a distant relative of whales, that are huge. The skull alone is 3.5 feet long, and we have no idea how big the body was because we don't have the rest
of
it.
Do you think that...
But it's a semi-predator. It has sort of crushing teeth and cutting teeth as well.
That's cool.
Do you think that sharks seem to be heading closer to shore and attacking people more often because they are losing their food?
I've heard various reports about that, but I think what's more likely is that people have encroached more and more on shark habitat.
Yeah.
The sharks don't have to come to us. We're in their way.
Right.
And the other problem, of course, if you haven't heard the news, is that sharks are severely threatened. Many species are close to extinction because they are very slow reproducing, right? They often have only a pup or two a year. And yet they are in huge demand in Chinese cuisine for shark fin soup.
Oh, no.
And so the biggest problem now for sharks, as far as their survival goes, is that they're slaughtered mercilessly, and then the fishermen just cut their fins off and throw the carcass away. And so, because shark fin soup is now worth hundreds of dollars a bowl in places like Hong Kong and Shanghai.
Aren't they feeding the other sharks?
Well, I don't know, but the shark fins don't grow very fast, and
right.
yet the demand is so high now that they're worth more per gram than cocaine. So,
really?
Wow.
I'm going to have to get
along
some
with
of
rhino
this
horn,
stuff.
Too. Rhino horn is being wiped,
snort it?
Rhino
I
is being
snort
wiped
it.
Out for the same reason. The Chinese think they're good for medicine.
Well,
God damn.
More on that after this. You're listening to Skeptical Yours on SkepticalYours.net and available at the iTunes Store. More after this insufferable disruption. Have you heard of our other award-winning podcast, Ardent Atheist? Well, you have now. So go check it out. www.ardentatheist.com. Banging your head against the wall uses 150 calories an hour. See? Being a skeptic is slimming.
Foundation Beyond Belief is a community of compassionate humanists and atheists supporting outstanding charities worldwide. Members sign up for automatic donations starting at $5 a month, then distribute those funds however they wish among the featured charities. To date, this unique humanist organization has raised over $750,000 to make this world a better, more humane place. We don't look to the skies for a better world. Foundation Beyond Belief is humanity at work. Learn more or join us at foundationbeyondbelief.org.
Hi, I'm David Diskin, and I wanted to tell you about Camp Quest West. We're a secular summer camp for non-religious families, and our week-long program for kids runs this summer in locations in California and over a dozen others throughout the U.S. At Camp Quest, we give kids the traditional camp experience, like archery, swimming, arts and crafts, and campfire songs, but we add science, skepticism, humanism, and critical thinking. There's a few spots left for parents who want to register their kids, but we're also asking for your help. We turn every donation into camperships for families that can't afford to send their children to camp. We're 100% volunteer-based, a tax-exempt 501c3, and our amazing financial aid program is supported by the free thought and skeptic community by people like you. I want to see how much Emery and Heather's fans can raise for Camp Quest West. Visit tinyurl.com/ardentcampquest or look for the link on their Facebook page. You can learn more about our California camps and the others throughout the U.S. by visiting campquest.org.
My name is Brian Dunning. I solve mysteries for a living. As the host and producer of the award-winning podcast, Skeptoid, I've researched just about every mystery and urban legend you can imagine. Some are solved, some remain unsolved. But the science behind all of them is amazing. This project is for a new book capturing 50 of the very best stories that Skeptoid has explored. Can zombies actually be created by Haitian witch doctors? What can exorcisms really do? Are pit bulls really deadlier than other dog breeds? Who was Jack the Ripper? Have dolphins really been trained for combat against divers? How much stronger can you become during an emergency? What are the most astounding experiments scientists have performed on themselves? Please help bring massacres, monsters, and miracles to bookshelves. It'll be available in print and in all ebook formats, and with your support to libraries, schools, and educational book suppliers. Join me in shining the light of science on the mysteries that continue to confound.
Massacres, Monsters, and Miracles, to be published by Skeptoid Media. I'm Brian Dunning from Skeptoid.com.
Go to Kickstarter.com, look up Skeptoid, and give some money if you can afford it.
Did you see that UFO sighting that made the news? What did that latest study about alternative treatments really say? Is this photo making the rounds real or a hoax? Doubtful News is a unique website featuring news about pseudoscience, the paranormal, anomalies, and questionable claims framed with a skeptical view. Come visit DoubtfulNews.com every day for news about cryptozoology, conspiracies, shams, scams, and more. Follow us on Twitter at Doubtful News. Critical thinking is essential in assessing today's news. Doubtful News helps you decide, can you really believe this stuff?
And now back to Skeptical Yours, where thinking is free. We're talking with Don Prothero and Adam Capelarn.
I like that.
It's another one.
You sound like a robot.
A new pronunciation for each segment, right?
Fucking his name up.
Capelarn to me sounds like some sort of juice you use before sex.
Some sort of what you'd use?
Juice. Sounds like something you'd buy at a sushi bar.
It does.
I'll have the Capelarn, please. Yeah. Can you wrap that?
Maybe
in
the key is not to change my name like I've been trying to do for so long, but just to change the pronunciation of my
That's
name.
All you,
there
pronunciation
you go.
Change. That's
then
all you
I
need.
Keep
Nicely
my funding,
done.
Huh?
Keep your funding?
We're not supposed to. Oh, wait, we're back.
We're not. We're live on the air, man.
You were asking a lot of great questions off the air. So what gives?
He asks good questions on air. By the way, Don.
Thank you.
So you've got two books out. You've got 35 total. You got two new books out.
Yeah.
So where does someone go to hear this?
Here.
Book.
Where does someone go to listen to this? Because no one buys books anymore. You're selling some books.
Yeah.
Are these available on
yes,
Audible?
Yes, both books came out in
Yay!
July. And you can get whole. Oh no, they're not yet in that format. Sorry,
I have to
make a connection. They're just now talking about Audible about making a book on tape.
Can we get
moving
Robert
toward
Evans
a world
to read
where
your
people?
Books?
What'd you say?
No, actually,
Robert Evans to read his book.
If I do the evolution book, which I'll probably do first, I'll probably have to do it because there's too many technical words for an actor to get through. So
yeah.
Well, the evolution book is full of technical stuff. So
well, they would just have you in the sound room. You can get an actor to read it.
I'd rather not. I'd rather just do it myself.
Oh, good. All right, cool. Well, you can use our studio. We'll get the hiss out of it.
Okay.
we have time now.
Yeah, we do. Anyway, I love your books. I really do. And I love the fact that you're unapologetic. You're really unapologetic about facts, about science, and you defend science really well.
And piss people off, too.
So. You do piss people off.
Really well, too.
Do you get hate mail?
Not a lot, but mostly just jumping on me if it's on the Amazon.com site or occasionally sometimes I'll get an email or somebody on Facebook who I quickly drop as quick as possible.
So. Right. The people who would send you hate mail are way too stupid to read your book.
That could be it, or they're just simply not interested in hearing anything that doesn't fit their preconceived world of view. I mean, my evolution book came out in 2007. I thought, okay, this is going to all get all the creationists riled up and I'm going to get all this death threats and all the rest.
Nothing?
Zilch.
They can't read.
They don't read anything they don't yes. want to read.
Right.
They don't read
right.
anything that threatens their worldview point.
So to a degree, you're kind of preaching to the choir, if you will.
Well, actually, it turned out, surprise to me, was that what I discovered is, yes, it reached a lot of people who are already convinced. It also reached a lot of people who are fence-sitters.
A lot of people who
had heard a bit about evolution, but not enough to understand it properly, and had usually come from a religious background and didn't know what to think anymore.
Yeah.
And it reached them in a way that a book that just talked about the biology of evolution, which most of them do, would not reach them. Because in that book, I talked about comparative religions and creation myths and the origin of the Bible, all sorts of stuff I've been trained in. And so all that filtered into it, as well as a very thorough review of what creationism is about. And so I got all these people saying, your book opened my eyes up.
That's good.
That's the audience you try to reach. You can't work on the hardcore creationist line, not until they have their own crisis of faith. But you can reach the fence sitters. And that was a very successful book in that respect.
Tell us about Reality Check. This is a book that you basically go after the whole science denialism thing.
That's right. Yes, it started back during the 2008-09 election cycle when I watched what happened to this country right after Obama was elected. In 2010, I wrote the original draft of it, thinking I could write the book on spec and then find a publisher later, which is not a good way to do it, by the way. You better get the contract first, then write the book.
Right.
But I wrote it anyway. And what it was is I was noticing, and I've discovered great minds think alike, the Jeannie Scott and other people have noticed this too, is that people who deny science all have the same playbook. They use the same strategies, the same lies, the same kinds of ways to sort of create their own sense of doubt about science. And a lot of it goes back to Holocaust deniers, which is one of the first groups of people denied some obvious reality by doing various tricks like, well, the experts don't agree with each other, or this person said this thing, and this person said this thing.
Jews don't have bones.
minimizing the evidence any way they can. And there, it turns out every one of these guys want to deny some scientific reality they don't want to believe. And that could be because of religious reasons or economic reasons or other ideological reasons. They all fall back in the same strategies. They quote mine. You know, they create lists of people who doubt the scientific consensus, and you break the list down. It's all people who have no qualifications of any kind. And it's remarkable how much they copy each other. And to some extent, that's not surprising because there's a lot of overlap, especially between climate change deniers and creationists. They are often the same people.
Yeah, they are.
But in other cases, the anti-vaxxers, interesting case, not necessarily overlapping in those first two groups, but the strategies are very similar in lots of ways.
Right.
And then there's a whole group out there, I don't know if you've heard about it before, the AIDS deniers.
Yeah.
Who deny that HIV causes AIDS.
First of all, let me tell you how I can personalize this. I dated for 5 years an HIV-positive girl. She lived with me. And we talked publicly on our show about this. Mm-hmm. And I would get... emails from people sending me this AIDS denial bullshit, and it's always couched, the stuff I got was always couched in, the doctors are giving your girlfriend the medicine that's making her sick.
That's right.
At the end of the day,
big pharma or big medicine, it's evil. Yes.
She wasn't sick.
Yeah.
She was healthy as hell, and it was keeping her her viral load.
Right.
I said load. At a functional level.
Right.
So she wasn't really infective even.
Right. Right.
So these people believe in HIV, but they don't believe in
AIDS.
Well,
they don't believe HIV causes AIDS.
They think that the drugs cause the AIDS.
Or they have other explanations, anything to get away from what scientists have concluded.
That's so fucking
like
crazy.
My cancer drugs cause my cancer.
Yeah. Well, the most bizarre case of it was
happened. That's another thing they do, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. The most bizarre case of it was in South Africa in the last decade, in the 2000s. For almost 8 years, the Mbeki regime in South Africa was run by AIDS deniers, and their health minister was a witch doctor who prescribed, first of all, denied AIDS was caused by HIV and said you don't need all the usual types of things we talk about, like protection and so on, and then told them they should take beetroot and various types of herbal medicines to stop AIDS.
Not having sex with virgins.
And the problem is South Africa already had a big problem with AIDS before this, which exploded for 8 years because they were all doing the wrong things and being told the wrong things. And so you can blame at least 300,000 deaths on this AIDS denial just for one.
Did none of these people watch CNN or have the internet?
Not in South Africa.
Right.
And remember, most of the people in South Africa come from traditions of tribal medicine and very little experience with Western medicine. Or if they have that experience, they're often suspicious of it. So, you know, it's bad enough you're fighting that and then have the ruling regime also basically become anti-science in the same process.
Right.
So when I tell them, you know, anti-science kills, that's one of the most dramatic examples of it. So.
That's what the book's about.
That's what it's about. It talks about a bunch of other things, you know, various types of alternative medicines and how they can harm you more than help you and certainly drain you of money and valuable resources. And then I do some things you don't expect. Like I talk about population growth and how it's going in the future and things that I am as a geologist familiar with, like the limits of resources, especially oil and mineral resources, something geologists have not had any doubts about for decades. We could predict what's going on very well. But nobody wants to hear what we have to say because it's so negative. So
you're a geologist and a paleontologist?
Yes. I was trained as to become a paleontologist, you have to be both a biologist and a geologist.
Jesus.
So I've been both all my career. So.
Wow. I don't guess you tackle the GMOs, do you?
Pardon?
Genetically modified foods?
I didn't think there was a room for that in there
That's a whole other book.
It's a big topic. And what I wanted to do in that book was just tackle topics that scientific consensus is pretty clear.
Yeah.
A GMO is still sort of on the fence as far as a lot of people are concerned. It hasn't emerged as an overwhelming consensus by 80-90% more of scientists. So I figured that was something that was still out there, along with some other ideas as well. But, you know, there isn't any doubt about climate change. There isn't any doubt about AIDS being caused by HIV or evolution. Mm. Those are topics that all the scientific community has a 99% consensus on.
Well, the problem with GMOs is there are issues that need to be need to be thought about, addressed,
and
legislated.
It's more complex because nothing you eat is natural. Okay, every domesticated product we have was artificially modified by humans. Yeah, there are. We don't eat any wild food of any kind, right? It's all modified by humans in the past.
The atheist nightmare. Yeah, the banana was not. We made the banana.
Thanks to Ray Comfort, of course.
Yeah,
we learned this.
Right. All right,
man.
We'll be back right after this break. You're listening to Skeptically Yours on SkepticallyYours.net and available at the iTunes Store. More after this intolerable intermission. And now a special announcement.
This is a big super shout out to one of our listeners, Scott Lesh. This is someone who asked us to say his name on the air. I hope I did it right. So there.
He did. He said, will you say my name? No, I hope they say my name on the air anyway.
Also, here's a special shout out to a few of our larger contributors. Snake Oil, Matthew D., Dang G., the United Church of Bacon, and Aubrey Ayash.
Ayash.
Thanks for being there, everybody.
And now back to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. We're talking with Don Prothero and Artem Claypont. Come with us. Name, faggot bargains.
God, you're a whole different person.
I nailed that one. All right. I didn't have your mics up. I'm sorry, guys.
You nailed that one,
the entire show.
I did nail that one.
You've become a totally different person.
Well, this is the real
I love having you on the
character.
Show, Skeptically Yours. I really have... even as a friend, when we hang out, you're not this. Normally, we're just talking about fisting and raping and killing. And
I don't know what you're talking
normal
about.
Normal atheist stuff.
Yeah, normal atheist conversation.
Baby eating, yes, right. Yes.
Baby eating. So,
stem cells?
Has there been any lashback from this book?
Lash?
I mean,
Reality Check has only been out, both of them actually, only been out since TAM, which now, 3 weeks since that was over.
Wow. Oh, I missed TAM.
Is it 3 weeks or four now? It's getting there.
It's getting there.
But, you know, it was just barely available online through Amazon and other places just after TAM.
Okay.
So it's only had a couple weeks to sell. So I don't know what to expect until it's had a little more time. There has been backlash, however, on the Abominable Science book, because the cryptozoologists have already started to find out it's there. And I've got two, if you look at the Amazon.com reviews on the Abominable Science, I've got two cryptozoologists who hate it already.
Is it like, how dare you write a book about
cryptozoology? That's right, that's right. Well, there's nine or ten that love it and gave it 5 stars, so
that's good.
A good ratio. But I knew that we'd rub some of them the wrong way, because this is a faith we're attacking.
How dare you write about real stuff?
That's right. Or actually critique stuff they think is real and is not. So.
Right. I mean, what are some of the techniques that these guys use? You know, when you go into a house with the ghost hunters, they have these fucking, these sham tricks. Right.
Instruments.
Instruments.
That's right.
Instruments. That they use to theoretically measure things that they're claiming are X. You know what I mean?
Right,
I mean, I'm surprised that cryptozoologists even have something to do. Because, honestly,
well,
because it gets down to...
studying unreal subject matter, that's remarkable, yes.
Is it by definition unreal?
Not by definition, but I would say by reality.
Is there any conceivable example of a real...
He loves this. He keeps going back. Well, again, none of the ones that are conventionally considered cryptids have any likelihood of existing.
Right.
There are some things that may exist, on the, but they're not that familiar. So.
You know, every once in a while, I'll have somebody in our seats here say, is there any conspiracy that you consider to be possible? Is there any? Do you? They're trying to trick you. They're trying to trap you. You know, and this is not unlike that. In other words,
I just like animals, Henry.
I know,
cool
right?
ass mythical animals.
Well, are there? I want to get to the real question underneath your stupid question, and that is, are there examples of ever in history of animals that we finally discovered that we thought of as impossible or elusive? And the one that jumps to mind is not a it's not a cryptid. That fish.
Megalodon.
Coelacanth.
Shut up. I can turn that down. The coelacanth.
The coelacanth. Yes.
Now
that's their favorite. Yes.
That was just an animal that showed up, right? That wasn't something that someone said, this thing has to be alive. We know it's out there, and all we have to do is find it. And tell us about the coelacanth.
Coelacanth was an animal that had only been known from fossils. And the youngest fossil of them, contrary to all you read, which is incorrect, is only 5 million years old. So it hasn't been extinct that long, apparently. And then it was found in 1938 by accident by a South African trawler off in the deep waters of South Africa. And when it was pulled up, it was clear to the lady who first looked at it that it was, in fact, one of these groups of fishes that looked like it was thought to be extinct.
Wow.
And luckily, it was, even though most of its guts were thrown away, they preserved part of it so they could at least describe it and
DNA it.
Well, not in 38. No, they didn't know DNA existed yet.
They didn't preserve it, so we could or not?
But they found many more since then. It turns out there's populations of them off the islands north of Madagascar. The Comoros Islands in particular have been their main fishing ground. And then there was rediscovered in Indonesia about 15 years ago. It turns out there's population, different species down there. And then they were again rediscovered in South Africa. So they actually have a population, but they all live in extremely deep water.
Right.
And they're only rarely encountered because it's very hard. Most fishermen don't trawl that deep and they don't.
Well, they only have one predator. It's Bigfoot.
James Cameron.
Well, effectively, they don't have any predator. The water depths they live, there's nothing that would hunt them. So,
really?
Yeah. And so they're not likely to come to the surface and have anything large enough to eat them. So. Right.
Does the deep sea have its own canary climate change-wise? You know what I mean? Like, is there one deep sea creature that we should really
We don't know enough about that part of the ocean
to
tell you for sure. It is so something it where we're only discovering what's there now. And so how much has changed is really just not yet in the data set. Wow. But when the shallow oceans are a different story, we know a lot about shallow oceans, and especially, as you know, the coral reefs are the world's best canary in that respect because they are very sensitive to the small changes in oxygen, and especially temperature, and that's what's killing them right now as global warming is warming the oceans. So the shallow oceans are now killing the coral reefs.
Do we have the technology to clone extinct animals? And if so, why don't... Not extinct. I didn't mean to go all Jurassic Park.
Right.
But animals that might become extinct.
Well, there's a recent find in, I want to say, Russia of a...
The mammoth.
Woolly mammoth.
Yeah.
And they think that they actually have frozen blood.
Well, they can get the tissues out, but it turns out DNA degrades so quickly that every time they've tried to amplify those sequences, they don't get enough of it to ever be able to use it.
Like back to the sharks, what about animals that are alive today?
If the animal's still alive today and its tissues are in good condition, you can certainly save the tissues so they don't degrade. But cloning is not something we do routinely with many animals at all yet. So whether you're going to be able to clone something, even as common as Dahlia the sheep, is not cloned very often.
Yeah, I remember that sheep.
It's very expensive, and it isn't generally very useful.
You know what happened to Dolly? Oh, totally. Tried to rob someone on Hollywood Boulevard? Just a fucking nightmare. Completely addicted to heroin.
Are there people trying to save the sharks? Are they reproducing more sharks?
Not on any large scale, but I've heard of. The big problem is that sharks are not easy to raise anywhere.
Right.
You know, they need large amounts of open ocean and a lot of food, and so you can't do that very easily.
Well, we have to take a break, and by that, I mean, that's it for the free episode 50. Another show that went off without a hitch.
We miss you, Hitch.
We'll be making the full 90 minutes available to our premium subscribers very soon. If you'd like to hear the full 90 minutes, please go to skepticallyyours.net/ and subscribe. I want to apologize to Don for interrupting him because we ran out of time. We will get to, what were you talking about, Don? You were talking about something.
Cloning animals.
We want to talk about cloning animals when we get back. Don't let me forget that.
Plug Don's books.
And Don, where do people find your books? Amazon.com?
Amazon.com. There's a whole page of my books there, yes.
Yeah, you can get all 35 of Don's books. I'm guessing he has a tiny penis. I want to thank our guests, Don Prothero and Adam Kaplan.
Books,
36. His dick is even smaller. I also want to thank my co-host, Heather Henderson. Tune in next week when our guest will be...
Who knows?
And we'll be talking about...
Who cares?
I don't know.
Theme music, courtesy of the sound editor of The Aristocrats, Eric Wilson. And special thanks to our Skeptic Tank moderator, Joseph, father of one, Swam.
Aww.
And our digital publicist and web guru, Cameron, mother of fuckers, Winter.
Okay, that's funny. You've been listening to Skeptically Yours. On SkepticallyYours.net, I'm your host, Emery Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson.
And we are Skeptically Yours. Skeptically Yours is a product of an ever-expanding universe.